Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's very own personal finance podcast. I'm Taizad Adajaria. Last month, SEBI came up with a new rule that 20% of a fund manager's salary has to be paid out by way of mutual fund units. And we're not just talking about fund managers. SEBI said all those who are classified as key employees of an organization of the fund house, 20% of their salaries has to be paid out by way of mutual fund units. Now, these other key officials could be your CEO, they are your chief investment officer, chief risk officer, as well as your entire fund management team, the research team, as well as the dealers. Why? Because SEBI says that skin in the game is essential. If a fund manager takes risks and sometimes undue risks in the fund, then he should also put some of his own money there. Critics argue in private that this is micromanagement and unfair. So I have with me over here today in the studios Kaustubh Belapurkar. He's the director of fund research at Morningstar Investment Advisor India. And Kaustubh is going to unpack this regulation for us and tell us its implications. And also whether this particular rule will help mutual fund investors in any way. Hi Kaustubh, welcome to Simply Save.
Hi Kaza, thanks for having me.
So, Kaustubh, let me start by asking you the first question. I mean, Morningstar is an international organization. You've been tracking the US markets, the UK markets, Australian markets, and Indian markets, and many other mutual fund markets around the world. Skin in the game is something that we've heard from other regulators as well. But the way that SEBI has done, in the sense that, you know, docking away 20% of the fund managers and the key employee salary by way of mutual fund units, is this the first in the world, or have you seen this happening elsewhere too?
So, we do track a lot of international markets very closely. And, you know, we track 26 key markets across. And one of the things we observed is that the only four markets, which includes India, require a disclosure of fund manager investments in the funds that they manage. So obviously India being one of them, but the others being the US, China, and New Zealand. But this is now globally the first instance, at least in the markets that we track, where not simply asking for disclosures, but actually mandating a certain percentage of the salary being invested in the funds for that fund manager, and obviously a lot of other employees as SEBI has laid out.
So this is the first, you're saying, in the world where actually fund manager salary is given away in terms of mutual fund units. But as far as disclosures are concerned, where the fund manager is invested in which fund, those disclosures, you're saying India is one of the four markets in the world that make those disclosures.
Yes, that's right. And US being the most prominent one, where this is a very important requirement that has been put forward by the regulators.
Okay. Now, you know, as I said before, Kaustubh, skin in the game, the term skin in the game, again, is not really new, but it has been gaining currency in the mutual fund industry, in the markets, for quite some time now. And we have had three instances in the Indian mutual fund industry itself where, you know, some fund houses have been practicing the skin in the game for some time now. And of course, they've been doing it voluntarily. So PPFAS, Parag Parekh Mutual Fund is one example. Kotak Mutual Fund, I remember, they had come out with a release saying that all their fund managers will prefer to invest in their own schemes. So my question, Kaustubh, is that from your perspective, can that be called a skin of the game, or must you go one step ahead and go after a fund manager's salary? Or is investing in the fund itself skin in the game enough?
When you think about skin in the game, right, we think that's a very positive intent and a signal for investors when, you know, a fund manager's disclosure of investing investments in his own fund kind of, you know, let an investor know that, you know, this is something that even the fund manager views positively. So, you know, ways of looking at it, that he's equally in the right with us. He's eating his own cooking, you know, the various terms that are used. But the broad outline is great, right? That you're saying that, look, I'm making that investment, and a disclosure requiring you to show what are the kind of investments you made only adds that credence to. And, you know, India's had that disclosure requirement for a reasonable amount of time. I don't remember exactly when that was put forth, but, you know, SEBI had made that as a mandatory requirement. I think that was definitely a great step that, you know, was taken around. Making that disclosure public. How many people used it? How many people viewed that positively? That's a different question. But definitely that was positive intent. And we think globally that that's something which is viewed very positively by investors and you know, I said, sort of, you know, people who look at funds globally.
Do you also track this particular disclosure, Kaustubh, when you take a look at funds, when you analyze funds? When you talk to your fund managers, does this have a weightage or something in your analysis?
Yes, definitely. So that is a conversation we do have, trying to understand, you know, what are some of the policies that they have, or do they look at it? And obviously, you know, there is information that's available in the fund documents. So those are, you know, snippets, one of the elements that we would look at when we're looking at it. But, you know, it's not necessarily always the only element that you would look at before you invest.
Of course.
You know, that is a positive intent, like I said, that you know, it reinforces your thoughts that the fund manager feels the same way about a particular strategy as, you know, as he's urging the investor to invest in.
Kaustubh, skin in the game, again, is it best left voluntarily to the fund houses, or do you think it needs to be specified in the regulations? What's your view?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting take there, right? So, like I said, globally, the mandate has always been towards disclosure, because that is something which tells you that, hey, I'm making these investments, and, you know, this is what, you know, each fund says, that, look, it's a signal, right? But the moment it becomes mandatory, somewhere that signal, to my mind, actually gets a little muddied, right? Because if there were certain funds that, you know, managers like or thought were the best investments to make, that is a signal where people, you could go and see that these are the managers who are actually putting more money in the fund. But now it's become like an even playing field in the sense, because everyone has to de facto do it as per the. So the signal actually gets, to my mind, and I'm playing the devil's advocate here, could actually get a little blurred. The intent is great because you want to nudge people towards that. But, you know, there is a huge difference between disclosures and actually mandating investments in the fund. There's a sea of difference there.
Yes, that's what many people are saying. And also the fact that, you know, if you must have read the circular, there is no limits to which you can invest in these funds, right? I mean, in the sense that 20% of your salary has to be invested in funds. Now, we ran some numbers and we noticed that, you know, fund houses, large fund houses like ICICI, HDFC, Birla, you know, the numbers are available on all websites. I mean, they have like 40 funds, 50 funds and 60 funds. So, you know, now all these key employees would have to invest their 20% of the salary in all these funds. So your portfolio is going to be bloated, asset allocation is going to go for a toss, unless and until you consciously decide to keep this out of your asset allocation perspective purview, you know, which is also, you know, it's the whole thing is very cumbersome, right? I mean, over a period of time, and this is going to be every year, right? Every year, 20% of the salary has to be invested in all these funds. So after, let's say, five or 6 years at the kind of salary levels that there are, even 20% also would then overall grow about to be a big sum of your overall portfolio.
So, yes, I mean, you know, I've heard these arguments, and, you know, my take is multifold on that, right? So one is the intent, which was laid out by SEBI, is great, but maybe there are certain tweaks that could be helpful. And, you know, just taking it forward from my previous sort of point that I made about that, you know, if everyone is mandated, every fund manager has to propose for 20% of the fund, then that signal gets blurred, right? But if you give some flexibility, and exactly to the point that you're making, saying that, look, okay, you need to maybe park 20% of your salary into funds of your fund house rather than just necessarily, because that could address some of the issues, right? And I think it would also be another positive intent signaling that what are the employees of the fund house themselves thinking about, which are the funds they like to invest on the book in. Now, again, this is not necessarily a buy signal for investors, but, you know, it is a signal telling them that, you know, if I just look at these professional money managers, they seem to prefer XYZ funds from their own booking. And maybe there's some sort of a signal in that for me. So I think that flexibility is something I would think would be prudent to consider, because there are several other things that you would think about, right? I mean, if you were just thinking about it, like when you look at the landscape and you think about a junior fund manager, say, for instance, for argument's sake, manages a liquid fund, you know, in his late 20s or mid-20s, Kofos puts 20% of his salary into liquid fund. Now, at his stage in life, he should probably be going in all equity. Now, you know, people argue that...
That's also going to be locked in for
3 years. That's going to be locked in for 3 years. So, yeah, so those are the kind of challenges that can come. So the intent is great. I think some tweaks will definitely help it in, you know, resolving that. Obviously, even though the scope of employees is pretty broad, but now that's something, obviously, it's depending on, you know, the way the regulator and the asset managers look at it. But I think some flexibility, especially in terms of choosing the funds within your own booking. So you're still eating your own cooking, but it's not necessarily that you're tied down purely by, you know, XYZ fund. I mean, there should be some sort of exception, you know, and there will be a fair bit of you know, people who would want to use that because it just becomes too cumbersome otherwise, or not ideal for their own portfolios, right? Because the signaling is great, but, you know, just because the fund manager is invested in that fund now, and I'm making that point again, because everyone is invested in it, that signal is completely lost to an investor. If I look at it as a fund selection.
And there's also, I mean, this has got nothing to do with the investors per se, but there's also a bit of a tax angle to be clarified here, right? I mean, because when your 20% of your salary is compulsorily invested in a mutual fund and locked away for 3 years, should you then incorporate that salary in your annual salary and then pay tax on the overall aspect, or should you just, like, is it should we be 100 minus 20, 80? So you're going to be paying tax on that. You're only on the 80% of the salary that you actually get. So that is also something that I suppose the tax authorities would have to clarify, right?
I suspect that will be a 20 will be a gross number, and obviously would invest net of tax.
Correct. Like, absolutely. Coming back to the investor cost too, what do you think is the real intention behind this regulation? Is the real intention is to discourage the fund manager from taking undue risks in a fund, or surely your returns cannot go up just by this? I mean, it's naive for any investor to assume that the returns would suddenly improve just because your fund manager is eating his own cooking. But is the intention to get the fund manager to take lesser risks? And do you think this could have long-term repercussions about fund managers' perception about the markets or how he manages the funds?
You know, I don't think that, and I hope, you know, what I'm saying holds true is that, you know, the shape and the way funds are managed will tend to remain the same. It's not because, you know, fund managers have been asked to invest in X percent of the salary. But, you know, the basic tenets of what the fund stood for, the investing mandate or the philosophy of the fund will change dramatically. I don't think that's the opinion at all. I think it is what it is, that the intent or the skin in the game, the signaling factor for investors, the comfort that, look, me as the professional manager who's managing your money is also invested in that. So in that sense, that's the signal that the regulator is looking to send to investors. I think it's not like it's going to change the risk profile of the fund dramatically. And I hope it doesn't, because that will actually be counterproductive.
But the thing is that, you know, when your entire fund house, when the CEO, when the CIO, all of them are forced to invest 20% of the salary in all the funds. And let's say in a recent case, like let's say Templeton, when six of the mutual fund schemes were managed in quite a aggressive fashion, I wouldn't say risky, but quite an aggressive fashion, as opposed to the rest of its peers in those categories, especially the low duration fund, the short term income fund. I can understand if so much of risk is taken in a credit risk fund, but certainly in a short term fund or a low duration fund or an ultra short term bond fund, these funds which were caught up in the credit crisis, and the fund manager had taken a lot of risks. Of course, disclosures were made, but be that as it may, do you think those kind of strategies could be restricted, could be pulled back a bit after this, knowing that all of the fund houses' money now has to be invested in these funds?
So again, I don't think that is necessarily the case, because one was that in any case, the portfolios are so transparent that, you know, any investor should know what basic risk profile of the fund they're investing into, right? The other thing which would have been useful, because like I said, the disclosures existed. So as any prudent investor, the best thing would be as the signal factors to check if fund managers, the KMPs, the board of directors themselves were invested in any of these funds at that point of time, right? That would have been in the back of my mind, that if I see that, okay, this is probably a risky fund, I don't see too many of them being invested, any fund for that matter, then maybe I want to take a step back. So that is something you could make a decision.
Sunlight is the best disinfectant. That is what you're saying. Sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Yeah, so disclosures absolutely help a lot, because it just brings that clarity, and it's not being forced down upon anyone. It shows the real intent of, you know, the person, or, you know, that, okay, I like this fund and that's why I'm investing in it, not because I was asked to, or the mandate is that I have to do it, right? Because like I said, the signal gets lost then.
Thank you so much, Kaustubh, for your valuable time, your insights. Just to summarize what you said, you're saying that a voluntary disclosure mandating fund houses to at least invest and pick and choose the funds on their own, rather than having them to invest in all the funds, would have been a better alternative, to sort of a better way of sort of showing skin in the game than mandating every fund manager or every buddy in the organization, the key employees, to invest 20% across all their funds.
You know, the disclosure is a good thing. So regulations aren't disclosures perfect. Just maybe nudge, like the AMCs did, nudging employees to do it, you know, as a good practice, you know, that's fine. Even now with the ball set in motion that you have to mandate an investment of X percent into the funds, at least give a flexibility that, you know, you can choose. I think the signal that I talk about will be retained, in the sense where investors will know which are, even in the eyes of the fund house, the funds they want.
Which are the more preferred funds?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate role here, in terms of the other thing which happens globally is, you know, SEBI's got a requirement of compensation disclosures by fund managers.
Yes.
Which put down the rupee disclosure. Globally, the practice is slightly different. And India is obviously, again, a little ahead in that, where they actually require the last rupee disclosure. For instance, some of the conversations that we have with managers, what we try to understand, and globally also, this is the norm in, say, countries like the US, is that how is the manager's performance, or maybe the variable performance linked pay linked to the performance of the fund. Now that is where it brings in more linkage of the fund manager not taking undue risk, because you know there's skin in the game in terms of his variable payouts itself on a pure relative long-term basis. Probably pay structures like, you know, where you get staggered payouts of your so in some way this is probably trying to address that. But we've seen that disclosures around that, you know, markets like the US require that, are actually useful, because you can understand that fund manager skin in the game linked to, you know, how is the fund doing versus, you know, the rest of the peer group on expected lines or not. Linkage of his performance there is something that, you know, people look at as a great disclosure. We talk about a rupee amount, that the rupee amount may or may not tell you all these things, right? Because a simple rupee amount doesn't really tell you that. But some of these structures which are disclosed actually make it more interesting in terms of.
So instead of disclosing entire salaries, what you're saying is instead of that, when the US market or similar markets actually disclose the structures in the salary structures, and listen, how much of your variable pay is linked to what sort of performance your fund gives vis-a-vis the category averages, makes for a better disclosure.
Exactly. What would be the KRS? That's right. And you know, how would probably staggered payouts happen and things of that, which gives comfort to investors that look, that's the manager's skin in the game, that he's not taking undue risk. And you know, this is a classic example that we use. If, you know, say if an equity fund manager were given his entire bonus on a 1 year performance, that's not linking his incentives with the investor's incentive, right? Because the investor's incentive is that he's looking for 5 years. But as a human, if I'm thinking to maximize my incentive, I would want to perform well over a year's perspective. But if I'm told, look, don't worry about short-term performance, because that's not what we're going to track. We're going to look at 3, 5, 10 year performance. If you do well there, you know, that's something, that's how you link the manager's incentives with the investor's interests.
Makes sense. Well, let's hope, Kaustubh, that, of course, the debate has started. I mean, the entire industry is in chatter in private, if not public, about the latest 20% rule. But, of course, the intention, as you said, is right, and that needs to be supported. But the way you execute this entire ruling about fund managers investing, eating their own cooking, investing in their own funds. Hopefully, there is some more clarification about how this would go about it without making it too cumbersome, but making it in a way that it is really aligned with the investor's interest. Like an example of what happens in the US market is what you shared with us. Right, Kaustubh. Thank you so much for joining us. Your views, insights are highly appreciated. I hope our listeners also would have enjoyed our podcast. Well, that's all we have for you folks today. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, and we hope to see you back in our next podcast next week. In the meantime, for more news, views, and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.